Coming up on All About Android, we discuss the new Samsung Galaxy Tab S6, as well as Samsung's new Galaxy Watch Active 2. We also talk a little bit about the upcoming Note 10, which is going to be announced imminently. You're going to know all about that shortly. Also, Fossil's new Gen 5 series watch, Google Play Pass, your emails, and a whole lot more next on All About Android.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Capterra. Find the right tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Visit Capterra's free website at capterra.com/AAA. And by ExpressVPN. Protect your online privacy with one click. Yes, it's that easy. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/allaboutandroid. And by LegalZoom. Check out LegalZoom's Last Will and Living Trust Estate Plans now during National Make a Will Month. Visit LegalZoom.com and enter AAA at checkout for special savings. Hello and welcome to All About Android, episode 432, recorded on Tuesday, August 6th. 2019, your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
How's it going, Ron? I waited for Flo, and then I realized Flo is not here today.
Flo's skipping today, and it's still hot in New York, but yeah. I'm excited because we have a wonderful guest joining us this
week. That's right. Returning to the show, my first time on with Nicole Scott from Mobile Geeks, but you've been on once before. It was an awesome show. We actually heard from a lot of people who were like, you got to bring back Nicole. So I'm psyched that we could make it happen, Nicole. It's great to have you back.
Yeah, same. I mean, we went back and forth quite a while because I'm not usually so close to San Francisco time zone, but instead of either Taipei or Berlin right now. So very convenient time zone right now.
Yes, thankfully it all worked out. Ooh. You've been really busy, lots of events and everything. That just, you know, that means you've got a lot of content going up on your site. This is what it's all about, right? Like this, and especially this time of year, like we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, what happens tomorrow with Samsung's event. And then we've got the Pixel 4 down the line, everything. We're kind of starting to head into like Super Bowl season for smartphones, or at least another part of the year Super Bowl season for smartphones, right?
Yeah, exactly. We have the Note 10 launching tomorrow, and then it kind of like cycles in through. Then IFA's there, and Sony, and laptops galore, and just robot vacuums everywhere.
It's this time of year that makes me realize that all these pushes are going to consumers, which means that the holidays are around the corner because they're trying to push holiday sales.
Yeah.
And that means the year's coming to an end, which means that summer's not even over and I'm already worrying about 2020.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's weird. In our, like, this is maybe kind of a little inside baseball for how we operate here at Twit, but we have some tools that we use when we publish videos. And for the longest time, certain videos that I would publish from a single episode would be scheduled out 2 months in advance because we wanted to let the episode kind of sit on its own before we published any of these extra segments and everything. So every time I use the tool, I'm putting in a date that's 2 months down the line. And for whatever reason, like doing that on a weekly basis makes the year seem like it's flying by so much faster because right now, like that's September, October, and that's so close to the end of the year. And it's like, wait a minute. I feel like it was just yesterday and it was January and we knew nothing about foldables. We knew nothing about all the things that we've grappled with all year, the punch hole up at the top.
How far we've come.
Absolutely.
And how much more we have to go, actually.
In a very short amount of time. Yes. Well, it's great to have you here, Nicole. We've got a lot of news to talk about, a lot of hardware, a lot of apps. Let's start, though, as we do every week, with the news.
If flagship $1,000 phones were a mad cosmic titan, you could say consumers went for the head.
Ooh. I see what you did there. It's Android news.
Yeah, it's Android news.
There we go. Oh, yeah. Victor's going real deep these days. You're spending some time on these bumpers.
Yeah, I thought Ron would appreciate that one.
I did appreciate it. Well done, Victor. Well done.
Could we be seeing a drop in demand of high-priced premium smartphones? It certainly looks that way. Apple and Samsung both reported earnings last week that showed revenue slowing on top of the line smartphone sales for each company. The iPhone, of course, the sales dropped. They were able to make it up in other places. Apple's doing okay. There's, you know, the sky is not falling. Samsung specifically said that it saw more demand for its lower tiered A series devices than it did for its others, especially compared to the S10, which apparently sales for the S10 dropped compared to where they had hoped. We mentioned last week, Pixel sales, yes, were up, but that's mainly because of the Pixel 3a that came out earlier this year, a mid-range device, the first mid-range Pixel. That is a fantastic device. And then, you know, right now, Google is, of course, leading up to some big announcement later this year of the Pixel 4. That one's, of course, going to be in the premium tier. Tomorrow, we've got Samsung announcing their Note 10. That's definitely in the premium tier. Prices there are around $949 for the lower end model of the Note 10. Put that in air quotes. And the higher end model around $1,099. And then, of course, the Galaxy Fold in September, which is, I think September is the date that, or the month that they've circled. And that's, you know, almost $2,000. So it really seems like the tide is changing on these high cost devices. And I know we've talked about it on the show before, but I'm very curious to hear kind of what you think about this place that we're in right now, Nicole, where there's just, I don't know, it seems like it's affecting the numbers of these companies, and they're forced to admit on their earnings calls that, you know, sales of these premium tier phones are dropping. What do you think the reasons are for that?
Have you ever dropped your $1,000 phone without a case? I mean, I think this is the right answer that everyone's sort of realizing right now. Our phones are utility devices, and they're just meant to be used, not to be like coddled and like loved and kind of put up on our shelf. And that's sort of where we're sitting with these $1,000 devices. $1,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I recently reviewed Samsung's A series line, and I haven't done that in a very long time, mostly because they didn't know how to make a mid-range phone. Mm-hmm. I sort of looked at it and I was like, it's really off the mark, right? But the A series this year, Samsung figured out how to make a really strong mid-range phone, right? The design is there, the battery life is really good. I'm sure the camera is still oversaturated and artificial, but that's kind of across all of Samsung's smartphones. So I think that they have to admit that it's hurting their bottom line, because they couldn't keep on telling us in briefings that the numbers say that everyone's spending $1,000, that nobody cares. But it's just not true. The mid-range is good enough now that I don't know who really wants to spend that kind of money if they don't have to.
Yeah, well, there was something keeping people from doing that before. And now, I mean, the Pixel 3a is, of course, a really big example of the fact that these mid-range phones might be, you know, mid-range, you know, on paper, but they're bringing enough of the top tier features that people actually care about in the Pixel. You know, in the case of the Pixel, of course, that's the camera. That's the most mm-hmm. talked about feature of the Pixel. And if it's got the same camera, then what's the point of spending? Like, obviously, you know, people are realizing the value proposition between the two, and they're changing their buying ways. What were you going to say, Ron?
I think you're both getting to the point, which is that the mid-range phones are now better and better solutions, but there are also more of them, and they're supported by the carriers. You know, previously, the carriers have been pushing the flagships because that was the number one thing to go with, and we watched the flagship prices go from $499 to $699 to $799, $899, now to $1,000. And this is the—I mean, I predicted this when they went to $1,000. No one wants to spend $1,000. Not no one, but not a majority doesn't want to spend $1,000 on a phone, especially when you can get a phone for $350 or $499 that is good enough for what you need. And now is at a point where it's actually really good for what you need. I mean, to the average person, the big difference between the Pixel 3 and the 3A is that the 3A kind of feels plasticky. right? It's, right. You know, but everything else is on par. That's great. You have the whole Moto line that is affordable phones, that is real, that is close to stock Android and as close to a Nexus phone as it gets, you know, in terms of just a solid phone at a decent price. You're seeing OnePlus get more, you know, kind of a pickup in the marketplace and more awareness by consumers. It just, it's a combination of, I think, dealing with the fact that there are other options other than $1,000 phones that are actually worth looking at now.
Yeah. No. Yeah, Nicole, I'm looking at your on MobileGeeks.com. You did a 60-day review of the Galaxy A50, and when I go down to the rating, I mean, it's eights, nines. You know, like the camera took a ding. It's down at seven, but I mean, otherwise, it's eights and nines. And I mean, if this is, you know, it says a winner, 8.2. I mean, it sounds like your 60-day check-in on this, like, was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, you have to really kind of look at where you're losing out, and it's the low light, right?
Right,
and it's
right.
Just the fact that Samsung is oversaturated, right? Like,
yeah.
When I was taking these like vintagey photos, I was like, that's a vintage green, not like a pop star green, you know? So it just kind of like ruined the thing that I was going for with a lot of like my like artsy kind of photos. But at the same time, you know, like, it's literally less than half the price.
Yep.
So I can't even, actually, I could buy three A50s for the price of the S10 Plus. So like, it just doesn't make sense, that much sense to me anymore. But as a smartphone reviewer, someone who like loves technology, I'm always going to go for the high end.
Right.
Right. But it's just hard not to, right?
Yeah.
Like when you have to weigh in on like what's a DSLR replacement, you're always going to want to go for the high end phones. But I think for like the most part, 90% of my friends are just keep on asking me, okay, so what's good enough for 400?
Right.
Like,
yep.
What's like in this range? Like what? Like which is the best one? And then really, like, smartphones have just gotten so good these days that it's like I have to have like almost like a therapy session. Okay, so what do you really use your phone for?
No,
so,
yeah.
Like what do you like? Do you take that many nighttime photos? Oh, you're really in the club a lot. Okay, you're a mom. You have a dog, right? So it's like,
yes.
Really,
oh, you've
like
dropped your
down.
Phone. Oh, we've got phone trauma. Okay, we got to work through the trauma here.
Phone therapy is a real thing.
It's
a whole concept you could do right there. Yeah,
for sure.
Well, it's funny because my dad has been on a Galaxy. I forget what number he was on, but he's been on a Galaxy for years. And then I saw him recently. He's like, oh, the power connector broke, and it's too, you know. And he's the kind of guy, he wanted to take it apart and fix it. Right. But then he realized that was it's too small now. You can't do it. And he's like, so I got, you know, I ordered a new one. I got the S10, the new Galaxy S10. And I was like, oh, I wish you had called me, because I would have had him get the Pixel or the Pixel 3A. But he's into the Samsung kind of universe. But the thing is that he'll use a phone for 4 years.
Yeah.
Right. And they're, you know, I'm pretty sure he was on like the 5 or the 6 when this phone went. Right. Which is so like real people don't go through phones as quickly as we do. And their needs are much different. And I at the end of the day, to fathom to spend $1,000 on a phone for someone who hasn't bought a phone in 4 or 5 years is going to be head spitting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing that I'm facing a lot is I'm having to do things like comparing a Huawei, like a one generation behind Huawei, with like the S10e. Because I didn't realize exactly how strong the carrier relationships were when you get the free upgrades. Mm. They're always to like either the low tier high end or like the high tier last year, right?
Oh,
so like this kind of like cross comparison seems to be like where people are being offered the free phones. So like it's not even the newest phones today that you end up having to like have this carrier discussion around.
That is a really interesting point that I had not considered. Like, what are the carriers incentivized to push? And you're right. Exactly right. They're pushing not the top, you know, not all of the current models, let's say. But you often go in there and you do see them pushing last year's premium up against this year's, not necessarily premium, but this year's kind of mid or whatever. And that's a great comparison to offer, because that's a real to life comparison that people are facing every day when they go into the carrier stores and they don't know what to pick. So that's super smart.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I also wonder if from a, you know, cosmetic aesthetics standpoint, we're in a better place in the mid tier now than we ever have been, right? Like a lot of the, I just remember like 6-7 years ago, mid tier, lower end phones, mid tier phones didn't always have the greatest looks. They were the big chunky rounded phones that, you know, looked kind of cheap, kind of looked like a toy when you compared them side by side by the top of the line phones. And now they, like, man, the mid tier and the top of the lines, they look very similar. Like they've all got those design aesthetics that some people hate because it makes a phone more delicate, let's say, if there's more glass and more rounded edges and all that. But other people, I think, you know, like it or not, people do choose to a certain degree the phone that they're using. They want it to have a certain level of aesthetic, like a design kind of style to it. And that's important to some people. And the mid-tier is offering that now. And they look pretty darn good. So I think that kind of plays a part as well. But anyways, I guess we'll see how this shifts. Tomorrow, of course, is the Galaxy Note announcement, Note 10. We won't talk about all the details of the leak because the leak is basically details everything, but you can look it up if you really want to spoil the surprise. We'll be definitely diving into the Note 10 in detail next week on the show, and actually tomorrow for the live event at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, we will be doing live coverage of the event here. Leo, myself, Jeff Jarvis, and Stacey Higginbotham. So twit.tv/live if you want to have us talking over the announcement, letting you know what we think. This is leading into tomorrow's This Week in Google.
And we were talking about this before the show started, you know, with it being the night before the event, we're not really going to dive deep into the leak. But Nicole, I think you summed up this recently very well, right? What did you call it?
The most complete leak I'd ever seen. It was very
complete. Incredibly complete. We basically know everything about this sucker.
Incredibly complete, yeah. Complete leak, yeah. And it goes back. We were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, and we've been enjoying Google's anti-leak approach with the Pixel 4, with the upcoming Pixel 4, which is, you know, name a phone that hasn't been leaked before the announcement that we have, you know, as much information, although this is, I don't know if we've had a complete leak yet or not, but it's getting when the stuff leaks out so early and so completely, these events are getting a little ridiculous. So I'd like to see them try to get a little magic and a little surprise back into these presentations someday.
Yeah. Well, you could do what Google's doing, which is just like, yep, that's right.
Months
in advance, lean into it. Yeah. I don't know what that means for the event when they finally have it, but that remains to be seen.
I still think there's going to be a surprise in that one. I think that they're leaning into it and misdirecting. But Well, speaking of Google, moving away from phones and over to Europe, you know, what's the saying? Every action gets an equal and opposite reaction.
Right.
So if you remember correctly, the EU fined Google $5 billion in response to its ruling on antitrust violations last year, and it required Google to stop forcing users to use Chrome and Google Search on Android devices by offering them a choice. Well, so Google took that. They took it on the chin. They need to do business in Europe. And so now Google's announced that in early 2020, a new search provider choice screen will appear during new phone setup for European users, which gives them choice. That's awesome. Google also revealed that it plans to select the search engines by way of a sealed bid auction in different markets, meaning the top three bidders in a given market will be presented in the choice screen and ordered at random. So Google is going to be charging the other search engines to bid on the option to be on the choice screen. And Google believes this is a fair solution as it allows search providers to determine the value to them of being placed on that screen. And this is just, I mean, if someone hasn't mocked up the little Android guy giving Europe the finger yet, this is pretty much, you know, Google saying, okay, you want to find us $5 billion or we're going to make it back by executing on what you're making us do. Which I think is the way, you know, this is the genius of Google in that they look at things in a different direction and twist it just a way to be able to make money. So we'll see how this actually rolls out. But like if DuckDuckGo wants to be the search engine of choice in Belgium, they're going to be able to bid on that placement on that choice screen. So we'll be curious to see whether, you know, Bing and what other search engines are even out there. I don't even know. Like, there's going to be three options. It's going to be Google, Bing,
Quant,
and like
Ecosia, Yahoo. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just
Alta
looking.
Alta Vista. We're gonna have Excite. Lycos.
Ask. Zach knows.
Jarvis.
Yeah. Yes, Jarvis. Yeah. Yeah, interesting, right? Like, Google's like, okay, so if we have to do this, we might as well make a lot of money off of it. And they're doing it on a per market basis, which makes sense because certain search engines only appeal to certain markets. But that also makes sense from a monetary standpoint, because in each of those markets, Google can hold its own bidding war, essentially, and make money in all those different markets off of who ends up in the thing. Okay. I don't know that this necessarily goes against the EU rules, though, right? Like, Google has to protect its own interests in this as well, and this is their business, but I don't know. Maybe it does.
Yeah. I did look up quickly. After you, Nicole. Go.
No, I was just going to say, I think that this is going to end up backfiring them in a lot of markets. I've been spending a lot of time in Germany over the past few months. And one of the things that surprised me the most about when I would kind of like peek over someone's shoulder to like they would Google something. And I would always be surprised that they were not using the Google browser or the Google search engine to do it. So actually in the German market, anyways, people are very loyal to a lot of other engines based around privacy and not sharing ad information. So I think that this in Germany specifically might actually backfire against them, because there's already quite a lot of anti-Google sentiment going on over there. So I think it could be interesting anyways. This little dig at the EU may actually backfire in some markets.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
I'm looking at Global Stats Stat Counter, which is gs.statcounter.com. And actually, Victor, I'll share this with you so you can pull it up on here. And this is just top level market share in Europe for July 2019. And Google has, and this is all devices, not just mobile or Android, but still, 92.8% market share for Google in Europe. Bing has 3.8%. Yandex RU, which is Russia, I guess, has got 1.95%. Yahoo's got 0.92%. DuckDuckGo has got 0.48%. And SezNam has got 0.19%. SezNam. So now, Nicole, if you're seeing other people using other search engines and it's not one of these six, their market share is less than 0.19%. Admittedly, this is all of Europe, not specific countries and things like that. It's the whole entire continent. But the pickings seem to be slim.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh wait, I can do Germany. They do have Germany's, and it's the difference between Germany's. They don't have SezNam or the Russian one. They have web.de and T Online, and they both have 0.25% market share.
Yeah. Ooh. And T Online is Deutsche Telekom. So basically, every time you boot up your browser, it's Deutsche Telekom right there. So you're almost forced to use them sometimes, even though you don't want to. But DuckDuckGo is actually the one that I see most commonly used with other like tech journalists, because they're all like anti-tracking and all of this kind of stuff, where I just feel like I've already given all my information away. I might as well just embrace it.
Yeah. Although DuckDuckGo does a really good job with their search engine, not only from a privacy perspective, but the results are pretty great. But I'm never in the habit. Like, I'm just so in the habit is so ingrained in me.
It's muscle memory. Like, totally, I just type Google. I just go to the browser bar now. Like, I don't even go to Google anymore. It's amazing how it has penetrated and has become second nature. So
absolutely,
but I'm fine with it because it gives me good results. So whatever.
Yeah.
So I actually left Chrome a few months ago to the Edge Chromium browser, the beta, and I've been loving it because I've barely noticed a difference. But I couldn't use Bing. I couldn't do it. Like, I tried. I'm going to try the whole experience and go over to Microsoft, and I couldn't. The results are like half the time, 90% of the time, completely useless. So I tried. Yeah. I tried to love Bing. It didn't work.
Well, thank you for taking one for the team on that one. I don't know the last time I opened up Bing. It's been probably years. Definitely probably been years. Maybe I've done it randomly on a show when we're talking about Bing, but that's about it. Google is allowing select users to sign up for a service it's calling Play Pass. So this might be something that eventually everyone gets access to. It seems like they're just doing a small test of it at this point. Paid monthly access to a large collection of games and premium apps in the Play Store. No ads, no fees, no in-app purchases. So I'm assuming anything that appears in here wouldn't be something that has in-app purchases built into the gameplay. This would just be, you know, access to games that you would buy outright, like Monument Valley would be one example. Family plan is supposedly available. $4.99 per month for the test, for the trial. So $4.99 would give access to all of those games and premium apps. And, you know, Apple announced something similar to this a few months ago at WWDC. That was called Apple Arcade, which isn't actually released yet. But I think maybe part of the difference between these two is that, from my understanding, Apple Arcade has a lot of, you know, a lot of promises around exclusives dedicated specifically to Apple Arcade that you wouldn't find in the greater App Store. And here, I think it's just access to, you know, whatever library of games that developers have agreed to be involved with. And I don't know that we know anything right now about exclusives, although it wouldn't surprise me if that ended up being something that they roped in at some point. So $4.99 a month for a large collection of games and premium apps. Is that something that you would pay for or that you would recommend to someone who has an app addiction? Nicole, what do you think?
So I actually just did a lot of research on this, oddly enough, 2 weeks ago. Yeah. And in the U.S., 4.8% of people who play games spend over $25 a month on gaming.
Oh, interesting.
Like, these are the whales, right? Okay. And so the rest of the world's only 2.8%. I'm really impressed that I remember these stats.
Actually. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. So the, like, above $25 and above, right? These are the categories that, like, app developers are trying to target the most, because they make the majority of their revenue off of this 2.8 or 4.8%, which is a tiny segment, yeah, actually, of the
which
overall market.
Which is so
market.
Scary when you think about the amount of money those people spend. Yeah. I've seen the similar studies you're referring to, Nicole, and it's bananas, mm-hmm, when you look at the cost per user on that whale category in that top 3%. You know, like, I've seen it as high as, you know, the 5% of the users are generating over 90% of the revenue for an app.
Jeez.
which is just bananas.
Crazy.
But part of that is that you've got a core set of users that are, you know, addicted and get buying gems or doing whatever it is. But then you've got such a long tail of casual users, of people who download it once and never play it again or whatever. And that totally skews the data, because if you eliminate all the people who just, like, who they're not retaining, if you remove the retention graph from it, that percentage of users is greater, but they include the total universe of users because that is the total number of people who download the app. It's bananas.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah.
So the one thing that I've been thinking about since I read this story is that I fall into that, well, obviously, a woman category of casual gamer, right? Like, I don't build time to game, right? I just game in my free time.
Right.
And I will definitely drop 99 cents maybe every 3 months, like $2.99 or 99 cents, or I buy apps outright. Now, I was thinking, does my yearly app spend be, like, is it more than $5 a month? And I actually don't think that it is. So I'm having a hard time personally saying that I would spend the $4.99, even though I'm not opposed to spending money on games.
Right.
So I think that's where I fall.
Yeah, I'm not sure that $4.99 would apply for myself either. I mean, I buy a lot of apps, but I, you know, full disclosure, I'm not buying them. Twit is buying them. The apps that I'm installing and reviewing and everything like that, like, you know, that's part of the cost of us doing business, you know, reviewing all these things. So Twit pays for those apps as far as that's concerned.
Wait a minute. Twit pays for your apps?
Yeah.
We're going to need to talk after the show.
We'll talk. Yes.
I'm joking. I'm good.
Absolutely. You know, because it's like a hardware review, except it's a software review. So at least there's that for me. It becomes hard for me to remove myself to a certain degree and know what I would be comfortable paying with on a monthly basis. If I was installing, like, you know, a million games all the time, if I was a bigger app gamer than I am, maybe this would make more sense to me. But I have a very small, select few games that I actually keep installed and actually play with any sort of regularity. And the rest of them, like, I play a little bit and then I move on. It's so I don't know that $5 a month would be very applicable to me. What about you, Ron?
I mean, it's definitely not applicable to me. I don't play nearly enough games to justify it. It's more applicable on the app side because of what we do and the nature of what we do. But even then, if we weren't doing the show, I'm hard to think of an app that I paid for that I need that's not one I already use or have, you know?
Yeah.
So not for me. That said, I know people who do. Like, I know people who this is probably perfect for, people who truly are mobile gamers. And so they Google's going to run the numbers on this to justify it, to say there's going to be enough people to justify us doing it, or they wouldn't, or I'm assuming they would run the numbers. Who knows? They might kill it in a year after rolling it out. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I was just thinking about which apps do I not like. Have I struggled after like the review period's over? Like when you go to like Headspace or Calm is $70 a month, right? Like these are two apps. Like I wish, like I won't spend $70 a year on Calm, but I've seriously thought about it after the trial period. Mm-hmm. So if like there were some like fitness or like mental health apps, I guess it depends on what you're into. We would need to see the list, maybe.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I think that's a big part of it, right? Is like what appears on that list, and do you already own half of them, or you know, like how many is a large catalog? Is it like 100, or is it like 1,000 or 10,000? That, you know, if the larger the catalog, the more I'm like, okay, well then maybe it is, because then I'd be more likely to run across something that maybe has more value. About them. And full disclosure, by the way, I mean, you mentioned Calm. Calm is a sponsor on the network, but just so that's out there. And speaking
tell
of...
Tell them to make it cheaper.
I'll pass that message along.
Too expensive.
All right, so let's take a break and thank a sponsor on this network. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Capterra. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. So if you're looking for software for your business, you might not know that there is a software suite that is tailor-made to the specific business that you do. It's kind of crazy. You can go on Capterra and you can find those. If you're tied down at work, you don't want to, you know, let software, you know, and searching for the software kind of kill your time. You can ditch the office overtime and find options for your business in minutes with Capterra. They really make it super easy. You read hundreds of thousands of reviews and make finding the right software for your business a breeze at capterra.com/AAA. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. They have over 975,000 reviews of products from real software users. You can discover everything that you need to make an informed decision with all that information. You can search more than 700 specific categories of software, everything from project management to email marketing to e-commerce software. No matter what kind of software your business needs, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution and fast. So you can join the millions of people who use Capterra every month to find the right tools for their business. And I mean, you hop on the site, you plug in a search for any type of category. I mean, there's tons of categories, and you're going to find all those results that come back that apply. Like, we're looking at accounting software right now, and I mean, you just end up with so many options, and you can narrow it down to features that you're looking for. You can filter down those results, you know, down from the 300s down to hopefully, you know, a small number that encapsulate everything that you need. And it just makes making that decision even easier when you can dial in that deeply. Capterra believes that software makes the world a better place, because software can help every organization become a more efficient, effective version of itself. Visit capterra.com/AAA for free today, and you can find the tools to make an informed decision for your business. That's capterra.com/AAA, capterra.com/AAA. Capterra is software selection simplified. And we thank Capterra for their support of All About Android. All right, let's talk about a little bit of hardware up next. Just a little bit. Actually, a lot of bit. The Shield TV. This, I feel like, you know, we're regularly talking about the Shield TV primarily because it keeps on going. We actually just saw, I saw over the weekend, an update to the Shield TV that brings my Shield TV up to Pi. By the way, it launched 5 years ago. It launched with Jelly Bean, and now it's upgraded to Pi. So they are doing a great job with updates.
And
on the
Jason, that is why the NVIDIA Shield is in the Android Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's it, right?
It is the second inductee into the Android Hall of Fame, right next to the Nexus 5. and the great thing is that it's still active and it's still rolling. So good job,
still
NVIDIA.
Still rolling, man. Just put out.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. Do you have the Shield TV?
I used to. I ended up giving it up to a friend when I moved. It was like a really good parting gift. But isn't it one of like the longest running devices for getting updates?
I think it is. I mean, it must be 5 years later and it's still receiving updates. I mean, what's a bummer is that this is so outside of the norm. You know, what's a bummer is that we freak out that it's at 5 years. But man, wouldn't it be nice if that was just the norm for 5 years, you know, and not one or two, which is kind of pathetic when you think about it. Well, this story isn't necessarily about that updates, although that's really impressive. Apparently, we're hearing more and more about an updated version of the Shield TV, and now it looks like not one but two upcoming models are in the pipeline. XDA had this. Of course, there was a recently filed FCC certification that pointed to an updated model of what already exists. So a Shield TV with better internals, a new Shield controller, a new remote to follow along. And now there's evidence pointing to a second Shield TV device. This one would probably be a smaller form factor. There's a little bit of information to glean from this XDA article. They really had to kind of do some thinking around this. So there's no absolute specifics as far as what we're going to expect. But what they do know about it is that there's no TV tuner. There's no USB port. It has SD card support, and it would be running a revised Tegra X1. So the speculation here, and that it's fanless. So the speculation is that this could be some sort of Shield Android TV dongle, like a smaller form factor Shield TV in a dongle form. And that could be exciting too. So if you are a fan of Shield TV, I think we're starting. I mean, it's got to be right around the corner. These FCC filings are happening, you know, this past month or so. And that usually means that it's right around the corner, right? That's usually the pathway.
And it's been forever since the last one. So,
oh, yeah.
I mean, we're due.
Yeah.
We're definitely due.
We are overdue for one.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, cool. Me too.
Well, you know what's also around the corner?
What's that?
We mentioned it earlier. It's IFA, right? And so right out of the gate, LG released an invite for their event at IFA, which is coming up just around the corner. The event is expected to be the LG V60 Think or something in the V series. But interestingly enough, the invite video shows a game playing on one screen that hops to a second screen next to it on a fold-out panel. Then the panel closes to reveal a screen on the front of the panel with the date and the time of the event. So lots of speculation as to what this means. The LG V50 was released earlier this year with a second screen attachment that looks similar to the video. And other specs are rumored to be a three-camera setup, a Snapdragon 855, and we're going to find out on September 6th in Berlin. And, you know, with all the talk about foldables and rollable devices and stuff like that, Nicole, do you think that the second screen attachment is actually a good alternative to the foldable, you know, kind of market? Like, is this LG, you know, kind of trying to dip their toe in the foldable side but offering a second screen? What do you take? What's your take on this?
Honestly, I liked the second screen when I saw it on the V50. I thought it made a lot more sense than what I was seeing with the other foldable devices because it was durable. I mean, it was like a hinge that you put together and it folded like a book. It was great. Like, there was no thoughts in my mind, oh, is it going to scratch on the outside or like what's the durability on this going to look like? It looked like a really solid device that I could like take with me, because LG's always had that legacy of making highly rugged devices that are like built for abuse. So I liked the second screen option. I think that it's also not in this $2,000 category.
No.
So I also really like that.
Yeah. I can understand that. I can get behind that. I was just thinking as you were, you know, kind of walking through there's the foldable, Then there's the rollable. I think I'm most excited for the crumpleable, where like when you just like wad it up into a pile and then you unfold it. You're like, yeah, there it is. Whatever. You know, throw it across the room. The crumpleables. I'm holding out for the crumpleables. Yeah, I mean, so when I see this like folding approach that released earlier this year and that this is, it just reminds me of something that I brought up on the show probably far too many times at this point, the Sony Tablet P, which was years and years ago. I mean, this was probably 2013, I want to say, 2012, 2013, but it had that kind of clamshell folding thing to it. And what I... like I totally understand what you're saying and agree with you as far as durability. Like the hinge is built into it. It's not, you know, the screen isn't folding over the hinge, so there's no possibility that that's going to wear and tear over time. At the same time, having that like thick kind of bezel in between. Ah, there it is.
Oh, that phone, man.
Oh, that beast.
We go back to this phone like once every 6 months.
It
maybe?
Happens.
Like,
yeah,
we talk about
it comes.
This?
It keeps coming up. But having
like
that hinge
call,
there.
I like to call it the doorstop.
I wish I still had one, to have as part of my Android museum in my office. But the hinge point, as durable as it is, it still puts this like giant black bar in between the screen. And I guess if you're not expecting to open it up and have one large screen, if you are expecting to open it up and have two separate screens that act on their own, then that makes sense. But you know, it would do this thing where it would stretch out the video content across both screens and it just looked weird. Like I think you're looking at Angry Birds in that shot, and like that just never looks good. I would never full screen anything on that and watch it like that, because no thank you. I don't know if you could do that on the LG one though.
Yeah, I mean, like now that displays have that, like those curved edges and you can kind of like put things together and they're like waterfall, bezel-less, blah, blah, blah. I mean, like the technology's evolved a little bit. I mean, I would forgive, like, that's offensive, but that's also how many years old?
Yeah, oh yeah, that's old. Like,
that's old. It's very old, yeah.
No
yeah.
doubt, no question.
I like that it's offensive.
It is pretty offensive. It was offensive to me.
Speaking of the waterfall displays, I was at this weekend hanging out with some friends from the Bay Area who are kind of more tech-minded, and I had my OnePlus 7, and the waterfall display, bezel-less, you know, full screen thing blew minds. Like, they had never seen anything like that. And people were like, how do you use it? How do you not? Like, it was the first time in a while I've had a phone that people were like, even before I showed them the pop-up camera, but just the curved edges of the display, just like they had never seen anything before like it. And when I showed them the whole thing, they were like, oh, I got to look into that. Like, they were really interested in it. So it was neat to see a kind of a fresh, positive reaction to seeing something new with a smartphone.
And then was your one more thing the pop-up camera? You're like,
yes.
Like that. Check
then
this
that blew
out.
Minds. Yeah, that blew. I was like, where's the front facing camera? Where's the lens? And I pressed the button, and the thing is, more often than not, people don't see it go up because they're looking at the display.
Yeah,
and then they know that there's no lens, and then they see it above. They're like, how did that do it? And they do it again, and it blows their minds. So. I love innovative phones.
Do you know what do you know what you need to do to follow that up? And then, like, when you're holding it, and the little pop up camera's up, you throw it in the air and let it drop a little.
Yep.
Right, and then it like goes back in. This is like the next part, like the next level of party trick.
Yeah,
like,
that's a good idea.
Or hold it over a couch cushion and be like, watch what happens now, and drop it, and it's in before it hits the couch cushion.
Well, no, I've tried that. One of the assistant phones, and it didn't close in time.
Oh, it
so
didn't.
I don't play that game. I throw it in the air and catch it.
Oh, okay.
Don't get too crazy.
Even on the couch cushion, I was like, oh, yeah, no, that's not okay.
Oh, okay. All right. Don't listen to me. I would feel like, I mean, I've got a, yeah, okay, I guess I could feel comfortable. So if you're throwing it about that far, that would be enough for the camera to go in?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You only need to like have it go up just a little bit, and then it will slide back in.
I literally was about to do it live, and I don't have the guts.
Go ahead, Ron. Throw your phone.
I did it.
All right.
Man, that was a close call.
Party trick down. Got it.
You survived. Don't ever do that again.
Never again.
So yes, so Note 10 tomorrow, but Samsung did what they do sometimes. They had an announcement before the announcement. Sony announced the Galaxy Tab S6. I think this was late last week. It's a high-end tablet. So if you're holding out for a tablet, an Android tablet, this would be one of your choices on the higher end. S Pen stylus, of course, included. And apparently it attaches to a magnetic strip that's on the back for charging. So it kind of snaps onto this magnetic strip on the back of the tablet. And when it's attached, it passes the charge through to the S Pen. It's an active stylus. I don't know how easy it is to knock the pen off if it's hanging out, you know, magnetically on the back of your tablet. So keep that in mind. 10.5 inch OLED display, in-screen optical fingerprint sensor, as well as face scanning capability. Four speakers, Snapdragon 855, 7,040 milliamp hour battery. Dual cameras. It has a keyboard attachment that you can buy. DeX support, Android Pie. So yeah, it's not a cheap tablet by any stretch. It's available on September 6th for $649 if you get the 6 gigs of RAM and 128 gigs of storage, or $729 for 8 gigs of RAM, 256 gigs of storage, and there will be an LTE version later this year. So this is for the discerning Android tablet fan, of which how many of you are there? I don't know. Okay, so there's the pen snapping to the back. All right. Looks all right. Okay. Or maybe that's the case. That looks like a case.
That looks like a case. It sure does.
Yeah. Okay, there's the pen.
That's snapping to that's a different color. There,
okay,
there
we go. Yeah. All right, that's interesting.
Okay. I still don't like the pen, but whatever.
Yeah.
I would knock that off almost immediately when I would slide it into my bag.
I don't see that surviving very long. Yeah.
No, not at all.
So what do you think, Nicole? State of Android tablets. Would you buy an Android tablet for $700 at this day and age?
No, because I only buy Android tablets for my parents. Okay. So my parents like to have them as their game playing, surfing, reading the news kind of devices,
right?
Like that, like not your phone, but like not your laptop.
Yeah, casual kickback.
Maybe they're not gonna ever. Yeah, yeah. And like my parents have a desktop that they're never ever gonna replace, right, for taxes and things like that. So they yes. need the tablet as their. And I think that this is the case for like a lot of people.
Yes,
like
I would agree. Sounds like you're talking about
my
parents.
That they're just gonna keep. Yeah. So like these are the only people that I really know that buy Android tablets. Otherwise, you're iPad freaks.
Yeah.
Just like dedicated iPad freaks. Like I have no other middle ground for tablet users.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't. I definitely wouldn't buy one.
Yeah, it's
like
pretty
another device.
Pretty pricey for another an Android tablet. Scary. And I feel like the Android tablet game has kind of to a certain degree, it's a known quantity at this point. So I have a feeling that something like this appeals to a certain smaller group. But Samsung keeps churning out their tablets in this lineup, and apparently they're happy to do it. So,
which honestly they have to do because my parents are using Samsung tablets, okay. So I can't switch them to a different brand. It's going to have to remain Samsung. So Samsung has to keep making tablets.
Okay, all right. We'll put that out into the world and hope that Samsung is listening. This is their favorite podcast, by the way. So
clearly,
you know, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I don't know that with any certainty, but I'm pretty certain of it. You know,
in my own
being, I'm certain of it, but I don't know it for sure. I have a Huawei tablet that I reviewed not too long ago. God, I'm blanking on the name of it, and it's definitely like it's more like in the $300 range. And it, I mean, for me, like I just use it to play. You know, I've been using it to play a couple of games here and there. And it's fine. Like, I don't know why I would need a tablet for more than what that is capable of, you know. But people also really like their S Pen, and maybe they have a reason, like maybe out in the work, you know, out in the field or something for a tablet like this. Maybe with the S Pen, that would be. There we go. The Huawei. Thank you for Googling that for me. The Huawei MediaPad M5 Lite, which I reviewed just a couple of months ago last month, July. Time flies. So, yeah, and that's like $300. It would be really hard for me to, you know, plunk down $700 on a tablet.
Oh, it's tough.
Yeah. Should we get into a different type of hardware? The kind that you wear? Let's do it.
Well, Jason, as you're talking about plunking down dollars, have I got a deal for you? Speaking of our friends at Samsung, what if I told you that not 6 months after Samsung announced the Galaxy Watch Active, that they've now announced the Samsung Galaxy Watch Active 2, and you could plunk down $279 for this baby? What would you say to that?
I'd say shut the front door.
So 6 months later, the Active 2 features 40 and 44 millimeter versions and now reintroduces bezel control, is touch sensitive. So it's not a physically rotating dial like on the Galaxy Watch, rather a touch sensitive bezel, which is kind of neat. The Bluetooth version comes in aluminum and the LTE version comes in stainless steel. It includes ECG capabilities, although those won't be activated at launch. It's got NFC, Bluetooth 5, GPS, and it's going to be available September 27th, starting at $279. And get this, they're not discontinuing the first model. So if you want to stay with the OG Galaxy Watch Active, you don't have to upgrade to the 2. You can just go with the original one for the time being. Don't know why they would announce an update to a phone to a watch they released 6 months ago, but here we are.
Yeah, I reviewed the Galaxy Watch Active back in April, and I actually liked it a lot. But the bezel, the missing kind of bezel thing was definitely missed. Like, that's a really cool feature of the Galaxy Watch. So I'm happy that they brought it back. But yeah, 6 months later, I guess that's now the lower cost version, and this would be the higher cost version. And
options.
Yeah. Good to have options. Of course, this is running Tizen. It's not an Android Wear device. But yeah, I really liked the one before this. So I'd be curious to play around with this and get some of that bezel control. Are you wearing any wearables, Nicole? Are you on the wearable train at this point?
I actually just took off my watch active. And the only reason I did that is I don't like tan lines in the summer.
That's fair.
No. So the only reason I'm not wearing it is just because I'm vain and don't like tan lines. But I actually read it when I saw the news about the adding the bezel control. To me, it made perfect sense. It's sort of the one thing that was missing for faster, easier interaction with the watch. And I mean, I think that at this stage in the game, they would have already sold as many of as they probably would have.
Yeah, that's true.
So introducing a new one, right, for holiday season, I don't think it's that bad. And since it doesn't look like there's like that much of an iteration with like the chassis and the build, mm-hmm. it's just like they got a nice component update, and that's what they're rolling out now, maybe. I approve. Yeah. I'm glad they did it. I'm really glad they did it.
Yeah. It gives more options. I think that's a good point for the holidays. I'm sure that the original one is probably going to see some sort of a price drop, or maybe it won't. Maybe it is the cheaper one compared to this. And we'll see. But yeah, it's a great watch. I would love to play around with this one too. Samsung is not the only one releasing a new smartwatch. Fossil unveiled new watches, the Fossil Gen 5 smartwatch that you see here. And they released it in 6 variations, 3 different variations designed for men, which they call the Carlisle, and 3 designed for women, which they call the Juliana. So different designs for different wrists, of course, uses the latest Snapdragon Wear 3100, 1 gig of RAM, 8 gig of storage, 1.28-inch AMOLED display. It has GPS, NFC, heart rate sensor, speaker, rapid charge, and they've also developed some battery management modes to extend beyond what Android Wear offers. And this is running $295. And, if Flo was here, we would ask, you know, if any of these appeal to Flo. She has very specific taste when it comes to her wearables. Nicole, like, where do you stand on your taste in wearables? What do you think? Do you like these?
Yeah, I like them. They're a little too flashy for my personal taste, even though I kind of went with this like pink, flat, like the. So here's my thing. I'm a little bit clumsy. So anything that has stuff sticking out of it is an immediate red flag that I'm going to scratch my face or like rip my clothes. Or so for me, I see them and I'm like, oh, I would love to, but they look dangerous.
Yeah.
So.
All those. Yeah. Those knobs sticking out the sides. That looks like it's going to catch on something. Yeah.
Yeah.
The bling on top.
I'm going to need to take my sweater off and then it's going to get stuck. And then I'm going to like fall onto some train tracks because I can't see. Like, I don't know. I see those things and, you know, things escalate quite quickly with my clumsiness.
Just never know what's going to happen. One day you're wearing the wearable. The next day the wearable wears you, you know?
Oh, geez.
Exactly.
What were you going to say? I'm sorry.
No, they are very fashion forward. And when I see, like when I initially looked at them, I initially thought that they were good for the Chinese market because they're a little flashy.
Yeah, they do look a little flashy. But they've got, you know, the different variations. So I guess they've got options.
That's true.
Once again, it comes back to the options. So at least there's that, I suppose. All right, Ron, you got the ad.
I do have the ad, and we want to thank our friends over at ExpressVPN for sponsoring this episode of All About Android, because ExpressVPN is so vital to what we do. Because listen, if you believe you're not being snooped on or that nobody cares about your online data, well, I got some truth to tell you. You're wrong. Because if you listen to our show, we know you understand that privacy is often under attack. Hackers, governments, and ISPs are gobbling up your data. And that's why we recommend getting the software that we trust to protect our online activity, ExpressVPN. Their apps use powerful encryption to secure your data, and ExpressVPN runs in the background of your computer or phone, so you just use the internet like you normally do, and it just works behind the scenes. It doesn't get in your way. That's what's fantastic. You download the app, you click to connect, and you're protected. And that's what you want to be. You want to be protected. You want to be able to browse safely and securely. So listen, I never want to go online without ExpressVPN, and you shouldn't either. ExpressVPN is the fastest VPN I've tried. It costs less than $7 a month. It comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's how much they're behind this product. They give you 30 days to try it out, and they'll give you your money back if you don't like it. ExpressVPN uses new cutting-edge server technology called Trusted Server, and Trusted Server prevents the operating system and apps from ever writing to the hard drive. It's a whole new standard of privacy and security. And listen, it's time we put our foot down. It's time we stop hackers, Big Brother, and internet companies from grabbing all your data. Take back your online privacy like we did with ExpressVPN. And listen, VPNs, I remember back in the day, there were these clunky things that got in the way. You had to remember to turn them on. You had to connect and do all this sort of stuff. I tried ExpressVPN, and that changed everything. It's just one click. You're surfing. There we are. We're back in the 90s. You're surfing the internet. You're browsing your websites, and all of your privacy belongs to you. You don't have to worry about your data getting into the wrong hands, because ExpressVPN is protecting you. So protect your online activity today and find out how you can get three extra months free with a one-year package at expressvpn.com/allaboutandroid. That's expressvpn.com/allaboutandroid for three extra months free with a one-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/allaboutandroid to learn more. Thanks, ExpressVPN, for protecting us and letting us browse the internet safely and securely. Thanks, ExpressVPN.
Thank you, ExpressVPN. All right. Ooh. With that, it's time for some app news.
Let's do it.
And first up, we have our good friend, the Google Assistant, which apparently got a couple of updates.
This is a game changer for me, my friend.
Is it?
This is, yeah, sure it is. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the first update here is read my messages, which is a command that used to, when you would fire this off with Assistant, only read SMS texts and Hangouts messages. Now it's being improved and changed to allow for messages from other apps. So WhatsApp, Telegram, Slack, Discord, just name a few. You do have to grant notification access to the Google app for it to work with your app of choice. The last message on that service would be read aloud. And then on your phone, a card would appear on the display, and it can be answered from there. You can answer with your voice. You can answer on the display. Messages containing pictures or videos or audio aren't accessible in this manner. So you would not get the full content there. This is a game changer for you, Ron. Is this the one that's a game changer or the other one?
No, this one, because okay. I use WhatsApp.
Okay.
And what's great is that assistant with my Pixel Buds, I'll be, you know, I'm buzzing from subway to subway going to work, and I'll get a notification and it'll tell me that I have a message on WhatsApp, but I still need to open up the app and read it and listen to it now. But now with assistant, I can have it read my message. Like, this is great. This is the extension to my world that I needed. So I'm looking nice. Forward to using this. Yeah.
Yeah. Right on. And then another update is reminders within Assistant are now going to be shown on the phone as individual decoupled notifications. So, you know, I think I've definitely noticed this where all of my reminders end up in a single notification kind of, you know, stacked on top of each other. And now they're going to be their own. That allows you to do things like snoozing individual reminders to a later time, you know, that sort of stuff. So you can manipulate them and control them a little bit better. So that's handy if you use Assistant for reminders, which I do sometimes, not very often. Are you do you have Assistant integrated into your daily life, Nicole, or is it one of those Google features that just kind of drifted?
No, I use it occasionally. It's not something that I'm using often because I find my phone is then nagging me. Like every time I open it, I'm like, worst. Oh. Yeah. Sorry, phone. I let you down again. I didn't get to that. So it depends. Jeez, it kind of depends on my mood. If I'm on top of my game, then yeah. But if I'm like not being as productive as I need to be, I won't do that because then I just feel like I'm disappointing my phone a little too much.
And that's the point when you find the little power button on the side, you power it down. You go, you know what? You can go to the corner now. I don't need you to be disappointed in me, phone. Go away.
Exactly.
Ron, your beat is the emergency is emergency features in Android for some reason.
Yeah, when I'm not ranting about foldables and bezel-less phones and things like that, I actually am very passionate about emergency features on phones because, listen, life has a way of happening and you need to be able to handle that. And so I was delighted to see a new feature come into Android devices, including the Pixel, voice-free emergency service interaction. So this is meant for speech impairments, moments of injury, or when speaking might be dangerous. You can communicate with emergency services via touch menus.
That's awesome.
So, depending on the type of emergency, if it's fire or medical or police, and location is shared via GPS that is tied to plus code for identifying location more granularly. And this is going to arrive in coming months. And listen, you know, like the last thing you want to hear is when something unplanned and tragic or just dangerous or a true emergency happened and someone wasn't able to get help because of a specific scenario. So I'm glad to hear, you know, that Google and Android are looking into these situations and be like, how can people get help via their phones when they can't speak or when something's going on or something like that. So this is a great another extension to, you know, help protect us and use these devices to keep us on the planet a little longer. So that's good. And this is also my semi-annual time to remind you to put your emergency contact information in your phone and make it accessible in case something happens to you and people need to get into your phone to contact your loved ones. Make sure that stuff is filled out, because if you don't have it filled out and then something happens, you're going to regret it. So please take the time to do that.
There you go.
Yes.
So I'm looking at kind of the blog post that Google, you know, has on this, and they have a little animation that shows you how this works. And it's really kind of like, it's basically like the call screen functionality extended to emergency services. You get a page that allows you to, you know, tap a button on what type of emergency it is, and then you can watch as the call is made, and it kind of walks through, you know, all of the information that's being passed along. Your location, your plus code for your location, the fact that you need emergency, you know, medical assistance, all this kind of stuff is passed along. That's a really useful feature, I have to say.
It is.
It's really good stuff. Definitely one of those things that you're like, oh man, that should have been there all along. But of course, this whole call screening stuff is very new. Which I guess I'll ask you guys, because I've only used it a couple of times at this point. I am very unsuccessful when a call comes through and I tap to call screen that it ever goes anywhere. Does it ever go anywhere for you guys? I feel like the phone call usually just hangs up shortly after I decide to go down that road. And so it's more trouble than it's worth.
Not for me.
I, I can't remember the last time I got a voice call.
Lucky you.
I don't think that happens in my world very often.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I don't get actual legitimate voice calls. I get like spam calls, and that's probably why they're hanging up, because probably at this point they know, like, oh, it's unautomated. Yes, screw this, you know, hang up or whatever. But yeah, so many of those like robocalls that are spoofing my area code or the San Francisco area code. I mean, so many of them, multiples a day. It's really annoying. So I keep waiting for that call screening thing to actually be useful. For me, it's not. I'm sure it is for a lot of other people. Google Fit got an update, and yes, it brings the dark theme, just like everything else. That dark theme will actually, in Android Q, switch, from what I understand, based on the system-wide dark theme setting. So this is yet another Google app that ties into that. But they've also included detailed sleep logging. I think they had some basic sleep logging capabilities in there before, if I'm not mistaken. It's been a while since I did that. Actually, the Samsung watch review that dialed into that, I think I reviewed partially I used that for sleep tracking, and some of that data went into Google Fit. But now they've upgraded the sleep chart. It integrates with the third-party sleep tracking apps to bring the data more cohesively into Google Fit. Now, you know, your main tab will show your wakes along with steps, heart rate, and weight counts, and then new charts that detail weekly, monthly, yearly stats on when you start and stop sleeping and for how long. And I don't do a whole lot of tracking of, you know, like fitness tracking or data of my own personal, you know, everyday life or whatever. For whatever reason, when I was using that watch, I found sleep tracking to be really interesting. It's just interesting to see, like, to wake up the next day and be like, man, I had a really bad night's sleep. And then to be able to look at the data and be like, oh, yeah, I definitely had a bad night of sleep. Look at that, you know. There's nothing good there. So I guess it's good news that Google Fit has that.
Yeah,
I'm actually really excited about this because I'm a terrible sleeper. Mm-hmm. So I've been systematically going through a lot of different types of tech to help me figure out how to have a beautiful uninterrupted night of sleep. And one of the things that I would love, and that a lot of these like the WeThings pad is the one I'm using right now, I can't make notes, right? Like if I had a good night's sleep, I can't say didn't have any wine, right? Went for a run. Like I could drank enough water, right? So like I've started to identify things that like I don't sleep well if I'm a little bit dehydrated, right? So keeping track of all of these things, like when I had a good night's sleep and didn't, that's often not possible with a lot of these sleep tracking services, even if it's their dedicated task. But Google's Fit allows for that. So when I saw like this news in the rundown, I was like, okay, this is actually pretty exciting. Maybe I can start to identify personally different trends for how I get a better night's sleep. So I like this news. Big fan.
Interesting. So I'm looking up. I've heard of the WeThings sleep tracking pad. And how long have you been using this? And what do you think about it overall?
So it's a pad that goes under your mattress. So you lift up your mattress and then you put the pad down, because like I don't like wearing a watch if I'm going to get a tan. Like you think I'm going to wear a watch to bed.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I like it because it's not intrusive. But I didn't have it installed correctly, and because I'm single, I can like sleep wherever I want on the bed.
Right?
So,
yeah, nice.
So like sometimes it's like you only got 2 hours sleep. I'm like, that's not true. I know for a fact.
I know that's not true.
Great night's sleep last night, right? But then I realized I was on the wrong side of the bed, right? So then I had to start adjusting the pad to like be more central. I like it, but I would like to be able to add notes or for it to ask me more questions about like, did you exercise today? Like, which is why the Google Fit aspect of this is really interesting for me, because a lot of these apps don't have a holistic system. Like for the WeThing, I'd have to get the watch, the scale, and the pad, right? Mm-hmm. And you can use a mishmash of whatever, and it all goes into Google. So you can start to... So for me, I like that I can kind of like switch different text that I'm trying to get a better night's sleep, and then kind of have it all funnel into one place so I can, you know, just keep on, they keep track of all the data. One of the interesting things that I'm doing right now is, you know, that Lenovo smart clock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is like, so this is like a huge sleep sanitation device where I'm trying to remove all of the tech from my bedroom and just have the clock. But I mean, Google's assistant, it really isn't good enough, right? It's just, it's not quite good enough for me to take my phone away. So I'm struggling still to kind of figure out what the correct sort of like mashup of technology is for me to optimize my sleep. But I think that this is a really good step that at least Google's saying, hey, we'll take the data. You can at least make your own notes on it, if even if the whatever service you're using doesn't allow that. And it's at least one place for you to keep it all.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. What you're saying as far as like tracking your sleep and wanting to be able to track more contextual information around that. Like, you know, did I have a glass of wine or did I just stay up too late or whatever? And not being able to track that. That seems like the point. Like what is the point of tracking my sleep if I can't take a look at it and understand? Like, it's one thing to look at the data and go, yeah, I had a bad night of sleep. See, I had a bad night of sleep. And I feel like I had a bad night of sleep, and here's the data to prove it. But it's another thing to use that data and be like, okay, well, what can I gain from that? Can I couple it with this information that tells me, oh, I always have a bad night of sleep when I drink 2 glasses of wine. Maybe I should drink 1 glass of wine. Maybe that would help, or no glasses, or whatever the case may be. So anyway,
like, did you have a cup of coffee past 4
right.
o'clock?
Right, that's a biggie,
like,
yeah.
Right.
Like that's a really big one. Like I just feel like a lot of these apps aren't really taking a look at my entire life.
Yeah.
And it's a lot to ask, like, how many cups did you have a day? Did you drink enough water? Like, what did you eat? Like, maybe, like, you ate too much salt and then you're dehydrated.
Right.
Like I've been trying to make sense of this, so... Like any app that will take as much third-party data and pull it into one place, I'm a huge fan of, because I think it gives me a better shot of at least me being able to figure it out. Because I don't think I haven't found a company that's been able to help me solve my crappy sleeping problems.
Yeah, yeah. But then there is such a thing also, at least in my mind, is going too far when it comes to data accumulation. Because you could go totally down the rabbit hole and want to log everything. And that just takes forever. And that's kind of a pain in the butt.
And then what can you do with it once you have that data? That's the thing. Is like you can get into analysis paralysis,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
To a certain degree with this stuff. Yeah.
For sure. Technology is supposed to make it easier.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. You're right. There has to be a line.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
All right, Ron, you got the email.
Yeah, quick email from our friend Abram Miller, who writes in and says, I'm wondering if there's such a way to have a persistent notification. My wife has an old feature phone, and when she gets a text, it rings once. And if she doesn't look at the text for 5 minutes, it rings again. Is there some way to do this on Android? And Jason, Nicole, do you know of a way to get a persistent nagging notification on Android?
I mean, I looked up apps that do this, because I don't, it's not a part of Android OS at its core. I think Samsung actually has a feature on some of their phones. I didn't look at the S10 I have in the other room, but some Samsung phones have a setting for repeat message notifications, and you can kind of dial that in to like repeat, you know, instead of just showing you, a lot of phones will show you kind of the LED, you know, that like persistent LED flashing that lets you know, oh, you've got a notification that you haven't checked yet. But Samsung actually has the ability to set up a recurring kind of like sound of some sort that reminds you, like, bidip, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And I mean, I found an app that seemed to be referred to by a lot of people called Missed Notifications Reminder. Talk about an app that's named exactly what it does. Might work for you. I have not tried it on my own, but it seemed to be one that I saw a lot of people kind of pointing to. 50,000 downloads, 4.2 stars in the Play Store. And this would be, you know, it allows you to set a reminder interval, how often you'd be reminded for this and everything. So, you know, that might actually do the trick. I don't know. Am I missing anything? I think it's really hard to know. I think all the manufacturers probably have, you know, some of these features in some phones, and other phones they don't have it. So difficult to know specifically, but maybe that would help for everyone to install that app and check it out. And maybe that helps you, Abram. Check it out and let us know. AAA@twit.tv. If that solves your problem, we'd love to know. Let's take a break and thank the sponsor, and then we will jump into the arena and check out a few apps this week. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by LegalZoom. We are obviously in the middle of the summer. The last thing you're thinking about is finally completing your last will and or living trust. Now is actually the perfect time to do it. It's National Make a Will Month at LegalZoom. And they do this every year. I actually used LegalZoom years ago before I worked at Twit to put together a will and living trust. It was the easiest thing in the world. I still have the packet at home. And it was just, you know, it was one of those moments where you do it. It's kind of hard to do it because you don't, it's difficult to kind of face your own mortality. But then you get on the other side of it. And you just feel a sense of relief to finally have it done. And my wife and I were just both very pleased with how easy it was to complete it. For more than 18 years, LegalZoom has developed a straightforward way for you to protect what you care about the most, your family and your assets. It starts with a last will or a living trust estate plan. If that sounds confusing, you don't have to worry. LegalZoom can help you there. They have a ton of online resources for you. So you can figure out what's right for you. And if that's not enough, their network of independent attorneys can provide advice if you need more direction. LegalZoom is not a law firm, so you're not going to be billed by the hour. It's easy to fit what you need to get done into your busy schedule. And you can join over 1 million people that have counted on LegalZoom for a will or a living trust before another summer actually passes you by. Because as you know, you're going to snap and it's going to be done. And you're going to be like, dang it, I didn't make it happen again. Well, now you can make it happen. Now's the perfect time. Make things easier for those you care about the most. Check out LegalZoom's last will and living trust estate plans now during National Make a Will Month at LegalZoom.com. Make sure and use code AAA and be sure to enter that code. It's AAA at LegalZoom.com and you'll get special savings. LegalZoom.com, code AAA, LegalZoom, where life meets legal. And we thank them for their support of All About Android. And now it is time for us to take a little walk through a place we like to call the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
I don't know that I got this to Wade County in time. I forgot that I was going to send him the details because it's not public details anymore. But I just put it in the chat room. We'll see what happens. Let's see here. Last week's poll. I got there, looked at it. I was like, dang it. I was probably supposed to give this to him like an hour ago.
Quick, bam. Give him more time.
Yeah. Well, we'll take a look. We'll take a look at the standings from last week. It appears, let me see here. Button Remapper. Ooh, that was a close victory. And finally, I won one. 42.9% for Button Remapper. Second place, Empty Files and Folders Cleaner Pro. That is Flow's app, 41%. And third place is Face Pause. Not Face Play, but Face Pause at
16%. Which is a key distinction. And honestly, I think you're all missing out on the face pause. That's some game-changing software right there.
It pauses when you look away with your face. It does exactly
what... It doesn't play when you look back. No. Listen,
It never promised that to do that in the name.
It just said it would pause. It just said what it would do, and yes, there it was. So Wade County is amazing.
Oh, we love you, Wade County.
He calculated these results, even though I'm not pleased with them. I am now with that loss. I am in last place with 60 points. This might be my worst year ever, and yours too, Jason, because you're in third place with 63 points. 63 points, that is. The guests are in second with 85 points. And Flo, despite not being here, is still firmly in the lead with 94 points. This is great. This is her year. So let's see if she can keep it going. That said, I'm ready to have a comeback this week, Jason. I'm ready.
Whew. Right. Okay. Let me boost that up here. I'm just going to switch around the order of things. Ron, why don't you go first?
All right.
I'll show off what I got.
We all know, going back to the original days of All About Android, one of my favorite app types was launchers and wacky launchers. And I've gotten away from it because I feel like we've solved the launcher problem, right? Between Action Launcher and Nova and all the other great launchers out there. Even the Google launchers are great. But every now and then I see one that has the opportunity to be, you know, to make the jump. And this one is called Minimal Launcher. And you could tell it's MNML launcher. Minimal. Because of course, you know, like it's 2008, we're dropping vowels.
Yeah.
But it's minimal, so it doesn't need all those silly vowels. So yeah. Minimal launcher is out there. Minimal. And it is what you see. It is a minimal launcher. Actually, Jason, if you tap in the black area, there you go.
Even more minimal.
So what's interesting, and I'm going to give the developers behind Minimal Launcher a hint because they're not marketing this, I think, the way they could be. But so first and foremost, it's a minimal launcher. All you get is that box of six apps, and when you tap on it, it reveals a search function to search for apps or to go to the app drawer. That's all it does. Now, what they're marketing this launcher with is that those nine apps that are shown in the minimal box are actually driven by AI, and they are serving up the app icons that you use the most, right? Okay. So when it initially launches, it goes with the default set. But as you start using your phone and start using apps, it remembers. And so, for example, on my minimal launcher on my phone, I'm looking at the first icon in the upper left-hand corner is WhatsApp because I use that a lot, followed by Pocket Casts, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a great kind of that's a great hook that it's using AI to drive what, you know, the apps you truly use. But guess what?
What?
Because it's a minimal launcher, yeah. It's also night mode, folks.
Oh, it is.
It's got that black background, and if you have an AMOLED display, that's going to save your battery life. That's going to be easier to use in the dark. Like this is a whole new world of launcher stuff because you're not putting in silly wallpapers and stuff like that. You're just using a black background. So so when you open up the app drawer like you just did there, you can see all of your apps and then you use them, and that's how it works.
How
that's
minimal,
it, folks? It's very minimal.
So if you're looking
for, if you're a minimalist, if you're looking for less clutter in your life, minimal browser is the way to go. It will use AI to detect the nine most used apps and put that on your home screen, and then you go to the app drawer to use everything else. Boom, I just solved your launcher problems because it's got night mode as a default. So there you go.
There you go. Minimal, dark not manimal.
All right.
Minimal.
Dark mode, not night mode. Sorry, but dark mode. There it is. Minimal. And you got to love the icon. It's just a white line. That's all it is. Yeah.
It's a black icon with just a simple white line.
And as you
can tell, it's the Sony tablet, actually. Yes.
Yeah. As you can tell from the Google Play Store entry, this is an early access app. And so the warnings are there that this app is in development. It may be unstable. I have not had any problems with stability with this app. It's pretty simple. So don't worry about it. So it's free in the Google Play Store. Go check it out. It can change your life.
All right. There, see, I just used calculator and it moved from there to there.
Yeah. There it is.
AI did that. Artificial intelligence moved the calculator from there to there. That just happened, folks.
Yep.
Okay.
Machine learning, my friends.
Wow. Minimal launcher or manimal launcher if you really want to play around with how it's pronounced. That's up to you.
Minimal.
It's actually minimal. All right. Let's see here. Nicole, I have your app installed. So I guess tell us about it. And I love it already, by the way. So I'll go ahead and show it off while you talk about it.
Yeah, so I think it's pronounced Komoot. I like it because I've been exploring a lot of the cities that I travel to, and also I try to do my 10,000 steps quite often, and I like walking. But I don't like walking the same places all the time, so you can actually decide how far you want to walk. If you want to walk one way, do you want to like walk up hills? Like, how challenging do you want this walk to be? And you can say how long you want to go for. And it doesn't start from where you are. It'll actually show you all of the cool walking routes that are kind of around, like, where you could walk. So, yeah. Let's you have to...
Do I go to...
Go to, like, at the top where you want to, like, put a destination.
Okay. All right, so choose a destination. Let's see here.
Maybe you could even just do highlights. Or beaches and swimming pools, something like that. You can just, and then it'll show you like all the stuff that's around.
Okay. Choose the destination, show places on the map. So I did highlights. Let's see here. Beaches and swimming pools. Show me a beach and a swimming pool. Here, let's go to where we know there are beaches. to the beach. All right, there are beaches. See? We got some beaches. What beach is that? Start here. Yes, set as destination. Let's do that. Oh, okay. Got some walking rights over there.
And then it shows you all the little highlights, and then this is a route.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's not always starting from where you are, which I like.
Yeah.
Because it's not like I'm often not around anything interesting. So if I want to do an hour walk from where I am, I'm not going to see anything good.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So it figures out the route between point A to point B.
Yeah, and then there's like little information marks on the way. And if you put like your fitness level in, so I have a friend that's like not very fit, so he has to choose like I'm not fit. Yeah. So then I've noticed that it'll alter the route, maybe making it longer so he's walking on flatter ground, whereas maybe I want to walk over a hill. But I think that this route might be kind of defined because it's right by a beach.
Right, exactly. Not a whole lot of variability on the beach. But that's cool. I love it. And then it also gave, how did I get that information as far as, okay, because it had shown me like a little graphical thing down here.
Yeah, I think if you hit one of the higher ones, like the red ones. Yeah. Oh.
Let's see here. Oh, I see Abbott's Lagoon.
Yeah, so those are the interesting points. It even comes with tips from other travelers, and you can add information to it, which I like.
Very nice. We'll go to Drake's Head. Where's Drake's Head? Cool. Let's set this as the new endpoint, and let's hike the entire way. It's a really long hike. It's going to take us 5 hours to get there.
And I like that it works offline as well. You can download. Yeah. It'll kind of save your route just in case you get somehow you're off of cell connectivity because you're just such a wild and rugged hiker.
Yeah.
Out there in the middle of nowhere.
So my first path, I had it set to a fitness level pro and it was like a 5 hour hike. Now I set it to the opposite end of the spectrum and it's an 11 and a half hour hike. It was like, this is how we keep it easy for you. It's going to be a really long walk. But there's not going to be any hills. So there you go. Cool stuff. I love it. I'd never heard of this app before. It's called Komoot or Komoot?
I think it's Komoot.
Komoot. Yeah. Komoot.
And you can see it also does like road biking as well if you're a cyclist.
Yeah. Yeah, you can go up here up to the top and adjust. You know, you've got hiking, biking, all the different options. You know, biking, it's only 3.5 hours. For a bike ride. So there we go. Very cool stuff. Komoot, K-O-M-O-O-T is the name of the app. And I like that a lot. Very cool stuff. All right, my app it's a branded app, but it's kind of interesting. I guess this has been on iOS for a while and took forever to get to Android. I didn't realize that until right before showtime. But if you like Post-it notes, then you'll love Post-it.
I saw this one. I thought about it, Jason. I'm glad you're doing it.
And you know, at first I wanted to just be like, okay, great, another note-taking app. Like, why do I want to do that? And it actually kind of has a unique twist to it. You know, obviously they're playing off of the success of Post-it notes and how satisfying it can be to scribble down on a Post-it note and then be done with it and like toss it away or, you know, or stick it on the wall in a way that, you know, makes sense to your own organizational style. That's kind of what it's all about. Basically in Post-it, you create boards. And so, you know, some of the ones that they give you, for example, this is a brainstorming board and you could go into these and, you know, have different things that you add into these boards. I don't know what I just did with that board, but whatever, it deserved to go anyways. I created an All About Android board. So I would go in here and I created two different buckets, the to-do bucket and the done bucket. In done is finding news. I've already found news. You can kind of see there it says find news. It really does look like an actual Post-it note. I've already found news, so I dragged it over from to-do there. I also finished the All About Android doc, so I'm going to go ahead and take that and move that over there. I don't need that anymore. Right now I'm doing the arena, so I'll just go ahead and add this, do the arena. Maybe I. There we go. Good enough. Okay, there we go. I'm going to go ahead and put that in the to-do because we're not quite done with that yet. But, you know, basically I'm going to look forward and know that after this we're done in the arena, so I'll go ahead and drag it over there. It's a way to kind of keep organized in a very, I don't know, a unique unique approach. You can also take pictures if you like. You can capture multiple Post-it notes at the same time. I did not know that you could do that. Well, apparently you can. And you can integrate those in as well. Okay, go away. Okay, fine. Oh, there's all the Post-it notes. So that's a demo of capturing multiple Post-it notes, and then you keep that on your wall. Anyways, you've got all that workspace, and you can kind of play around with it and reorganize things. This is another example of how you would kind of organize things into different to-do lists today and done. And I don't know. It's just kind of an interesting approach for managing kind of tasks and to-dos. These are not notes. Like when you create a new note, you're not given a whole lot of space, especially if you're drawing with your finger. So, you know, you're not going to be this is not going to be a replacement for your note app. This is really kind of seems to be like an information like management, like maybe a project management or kind of managing, you know, 1 to 2 to 3 word to-do items. What did you say, Victor? Like kind of, yeah, kind of like mind mapping. That's a good comparison. So kind of interesting. I like how it kind of smooths your scribbles as well. It kind of makes things look a little better than they were when you scratched on there. So anyways, it's called Post-it. It's an interesting approach to this sort of thing. And it is free as far as I know. Maybe there's a in-app purchase, but I didn't see it. But it is called Post-it. Pretty easy to remember. And you can check it out now in the Play Store. All right. So 3 apps this week. And you can vote for your favorite app at twit.to/AAApoll432. That's twit.to/AAApoll432 is your favorite app. Minimal Launcher or Komoot.
Minimal.
Or Post-it.
Minimal.
I'm going to call it the Manimal Launcher. Victor likes Post-it, so he's voted for that. And yes, the results are private, but you'll find out the results next week when you check out next week's episode of All About Android.
It's like a cliffhanger. You gotta
that's
tune
right.
In next
dun,
week.
Dun, dun. So far, yeah. This is working. So we'll keep doing this until suddenly it's not working anymore.
Love it.
But that is it for this week. And Nicole, I'm so happy that we finally were able to make this work and to bring you on. Thank you so much for carving out a few hours in your evening for us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's been a lot of fun. You guys are pretty. You guys are funny guys.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. What do you want people to know? Like you're writing for mobilegeeks.com. I'm sure, are you going to IFA? Are you going to be covering IFA at the event?
Oh, yeah. I'll definitely be at IFA. Yeah, okay. For sure. And then I actually do a lot of mobility, so I'll be at the Frankfurt Auto Show right after that as well. So I'll be in Germany for about a month, kind of over there doing that. Yeah. Man,
you've got a fun life. Hopping all over the place,
cars,
it seems like.
Cars, phones, laptops.
Yeah, a lot of variety in what you report. So everybody should check out Nicole's work, mobilegeeks.com. If they want to find you on Twitter, what's your Twitter ID?
Nicole_scooter. I like the underscore.
Underscore is where it's at.
Yeah, I'm not giving it up. Everyone keeps on trying to make me give it up, but I'm like, what does it say if you take it away? I'm not okay with that. So yeah. It's staying.
Yeah, hold your ground. Listen, if someone wants to find you, they're going to be dedicated enough to use that underscore key. So, stick with it.
Yeah. Nicole, you're funny. That's awesome. Okay, so yes, there you go. Nicole, would love to have you back, and we'll bring you back on, and maybe Flo will be on that time as well. And then we can have all of us.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, thank you so much, Nicole. Really appreciate it.
Thank you,
Ron. What is new with you? Is it the Scorbit? Is it?
Yeah. So we issued an update for the project. For those who don't know or haven't heard or haven't been watching, I'm working on a new company called a new product called Scorbit. It's a device and an app that will work with pinball machines that will basically connect pinball machines to the internet. We recently did our quarterly update this past July. There's a website there at scorbit.io. And Victor, if you click on news up there on the top, you can go to the July update. And we did our first video where my co-founders, Jay Adelson and Brian O'Neill, kind of updated everybody on what's going on. And if you scrub through there, you can see we actually show the device in a pinball machine. And it was a fun little there it is. Yeah, you go in the back of a pinball machine, that red box in the upper left-hand corner, you see that's got a little Wi-Fi antenna, it's got some connectors and all that sort of stuff, and it's connected to the pinball machine, and it's pulling in the scores. We're really excited. We've got we're making some progress on the app stuff, so we're plugging along. So if you're into pinball, go to scorbit.io, check it out, check out the news, and you can see what we're up to. So, yeah.
There it is. So cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a fun time. It's fun to be working on something fun like that.
I'm sure that it is. I would imagine. Right on.
That one hardly seems like work.
Play, I know, right?
Connected. Yeah.
It does. And considering how little I know about electrical engineering and app development, it's pretty easy for me, at least.
You approve things. Yes.
I produced a heck of a video, though. That's for sure.
Good.
As the marketing guy.
Right on. I'll check out the video. Good work, Ron.
Perfect.
Awesome stuff. Victor, thank you so much for all that you do. Appreciate your help on the show each and every week.
No problem.
And thanks also to Jeff, who is in here helping out from the engineering side, helping us with the studio. You can find me on the Twit Network. I'm here doing shows and all that stuff. I will be here tomorrow for the Note 10 announcement. So that's 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern at twit.tv/live. And then, we'll be talking all about everything the Samsung announces next week on the show. But if you want to catch the live announcement, you can do that tomorrow. But that is it for this week. Leave us a voicemail at 347-SHOW-AAA. Send us emails at AAA@twit.tv. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Android Show. Every app that we've ever had in the arena can be found at our arena apps list at twit.to/Android apps. You can find show notes and past episodes at our one place on the web, which is twit.tv/AAA. There you're going to find everything you need to know about this show, recording times, the fact that we stream and record every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. You can find all of our audio and video podcast subscribe links. Everything you need to know is there, twit.tv/AAA. And I think that's about it. I think we've reached the end. So we'll go ahead and say goodbye and see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.